The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
Live from West Babylon, New York, this is Sports Talk 1240.
Good evening and hello again, everybody. Welcome to hour number one of Sports Talk 1240 on WGBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. Bill Donahue taking you through the first hour on this Sunday night, the fourth day of March 2018. Our engineer, Brian Graves, is across the way. We've got a great show lined up for you tonight. Up first, the host of the Mets pre- and post-game segments on WOR 710, Wayne Randazzo, will join us. In the second half, we'll talk to a member of the 1980 Miracle on Ice gold medal team, USA. Dave Christian will be with us. So sit back and relax. Enjoy Sports Talk 1240 tonight on GBB. Got some great stuff ahead in the next few hours. As always, before we begin, I invite you to follow us on our Facebook page, most cleverly titled Sports Talk 1240. There you'll find sports information, show information, and more. So you can stop by, give us a look, then you can click, give us a like. You can also follow us on Twitter at Sports Talk 1240. And as always, all past shows can be heard on our website at www.sportstalk1240.com. My first guest is the host of the Mets pre- and post-game shows on WOR 710. Lately, you get the chance to hear him on the play-by-play on the radio with Howie Rose, and just like today on the TV with Keith and Ron. Welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Wayne Randazzo. Wayne, good evening.
Hi, Bill. How are you?
Great. Great to have you with us, Wayne.
Now, great to be on.
Growing up, Wayne, you grew up in the Chicago area, I believe. Is that correct?
I did.
Yes. Now, who were your favorite teams, favorite players that you followed when you were younger?
I grew up, a fan of the Cubs mostly. I was, I watched Harry Carey on WGN TV.
Uh-huh.
And, was drawn in by his charisma and his personality and, Steve Stone, the way that he broke down the games. Plus they played a lot of day games still back then. It was like 4 years old when they finally got lights at Wrigley Field. So still a lot of day games and a lot of times watching them. But it was, the White Sox were a fun team to follow, too, especially as the 90s went on and Frank Thomas, uh-huh. Jack McDowell, some of those guys, Robin Ventura, some great teams that they had that were fun to watch. It was good to be in a city, especially for me as a baseball freak. It was good to be in a city that had two teams, and you could watch both leagues. So, it was a good experience.
Let the folks know, Wayne, for those who may be unfamiliar, how'd you get to New York? Describe your journey on the way here.
Yeah, it was kind of, I went to minor league baseball, and that was the path I wanted to take to the big leagues. I wanted to be ready once a major league team hopefully gave me a chance. And so I did 4 years in the Southern League with the Mobile Bay Bears down there, and then 3 years with the Kane County Cougars back in the Midwest League. And in the meantime, I did a lot of local radio in Chicago, started to do some TV for ESPN and Big Ten Network, and fortunately that put me in a good position to land a job with the Mets when that opened. They needed somebody who not only could do pre and post, which I had done some with the White Sox, but needed somebody who could do play-by-play too, because Howie was still missing games for the Islanders, and mm-hmm. Josh had his Chargers gigs, so they needed someone who could kind of do it all, and I was that guy. So it just kind of was a perfect opportunity for me, I had done plenty in my career to fortunately warrant that spot.
Sure. It worked out well for you. Now, we'll talk a little bit about the Mets now. In the offseason, some people may think that they did not make a lot of moves, Wayne, that they were kind of dormant, even though they did land a lot of players. Give us a little insight into your take on the Mets offseason.
Yeah, I think the fact that they had so many moves to make is something that kind of clouds fans' vision. I think at this point, when you look at them, they needed a couple of infielders. They needed an outfielder. They needed at least one starting pitcher, at least one reliever. They had a coaching staff to rebuild. They had some depth on the team that they needed to figure out. So there was a lot to be done. And right. Sandy Alderson and the group, they put it all together. They did plug every single hole the Mets had. The problem, I think, that the fans feel like didn't happen is that they didn't do so with somebody that was of a marquee name. There wasn't an Eric Hosmer signing. There wasn't a run for Yu Darvish or a Jake Arrieta, although technically they still could make that run at Arrieta. He's still out there. But, you know, no flashy move was made. You know, maybe the biggest flash was bringing back Jay Bruce. You know, Adrian Gonzalez is a big name, but at this stage in his career, not quite the player he used to be. So, you know, there's some angst, I guess, about the fact that, you know, the Yankees got Giancarlo Stanton and the Mets didn't get anyone of that stature. But the Mets got a lot of players, and they get a lot of players that will help them win in 2018. And I can't sit here and say this is a surefire 95-win team. But, you know, every team has holes. I think the Yankees, you know, they didn't do enough to build their starting pitching. Again, they still can. There's still guys out there, but, you know, to this point, they haven't. So, you know, I don't think there's a perfect team out there, but I think the Mets did what they had to do to try to, within their budget, and they're still spending a lot of money, maybe more than they ever have going into a season, you know, figured out a way to fill as many holes as possible with the players they picked up.
Just didn't make that big splash, Wayne. That's the issue people have.
Right, and I don't think you need to. Would it have helped to make a run at Mike Moustakas? Well, he's still out there. So, you know, it's not as if the players that would have been the big splash in free agency would have necessarily helped the team. You know, I don't know that giving a bunch of money to Mike Moustakas is helpful to where the Mets were. Mm-hmm. You know, Eric Hosmer, you know, the jury is kind of out on him, whether he's a great player that can help a team win or whether he's just a winning player, you know, kind of in the model of a Keith Hernandez. You know, is Eric Hosmer a difference maker or is he a guy who is the last piece of a puzzle? It's hard to say about Hosmer if you're really getting what's worth $150 million. You know, Keith Hernandez, the Mets gave him $8 million when he signed a five-year deal. So, you know, you're dealing with a different number. And right. It's tough. It's tough to make those decisions. Now, and as far as a trade goes, well, the Mets couldn't really land anybody because their farm system has been beat up, and it's not produced high-quality players in the last couple of years that could go out and get you those types of guys that you would want. Now, if in July the Mets want to try to make a trade, I think they have a piece or two to do that. But to get the big-time prospects, you're talking about top 50 type prospects to get a big-time player, and they don't have that. I mean, their biggest prospect is Andrés Giménez, who's maybe cracking the top 100 in some rankings, and in others he's not. So they don't have the number 10 prospect in all of baseball to go land someone that has a Marcell Ozuna type stature.
Right. Now DeGrom is down, Wayne. Already seems the injury bug is biting the Mets.
Well, I mean, I think it's just spring training. You know, you're going to have nicks and knacks, and people are going to have, you know, just some soreness from not having played baseball in a while and all that. You know, nobody's gotten hurt to the point where, you know, you're looking at any long-term effects. You know, if DeGrom misses the first week of the season, you know, I don't think that's a big deal. You know, Anthony Swarzak seems like he's fine again, a guy who might start the year on the DL, but maybe not. Rosario tweaked his knee, but he'll be back in a few games. So nothing major. And again, these guys have been not playing games like this for 4 months. So it's why you go through this and why you take 30 games and get ready for the season so everybody can kind of work out the kinks.
We're speaking to Wayne Randazzo tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I feel Sandy did quite a nice job assembling the new coaching staff, Wayne. We got Mickey Callaway as the manager, Dave Island as the pitching coach. Expand a little bit on what you see so far from the coaching staff.
But yeah, Dave Island was a great addition. You know, yeah. Obviously Mickey as the manager is a guy who's going to wear it all. But, you know, I think that Mickey and Dave really work well together. And I think Dave's really taking it upon himself to work with these pitchers and to get to know everybody and to be, you know, the lead man there as far as the pitching goes. And I think he's an aggressive guy. He's ready to take that lead. And I think he'll do a very nice job. Pat Ressler was promoted to be the hitting coach, a guy who basically is just an extension of Kevin Long. They worked in tandem together. Everybody loves Pat Ressler. He's not a gregarious type like Kay Long, but he is a guy who gets the job done. You know, Ruben Amaro Jr., former general manager of the Phillies, now a first base coach, kind of an oddity to see someone who wore a suit to wear a uniform again. He's working hard. You know, you see him. He might be the sweatiest of the coaches in camp so far. And Gary DeSarcina is another no-nonsense guy, is the bench coach who, you know, very well could be a big league manager himself at some point. And, you know, again, is just kind of a take charge type of guy. So I think the Mets have a good mix here. And, you know, for whatever that's worth, you know, if you ask the Red Sox, they won the AL East last year, but they were not happy with their coaching staff. They got rid of pretty much all of them. You know, it just depends on how much you value those positions. But, you know, I think the Mets have a good group, some professionals in there. And, you know, I think that's all you can really ask for.
Okay. Well, one position, Wayne, where people may be a little disappointed at the lack of movement, not that there were that many people out there to fill, was the catching position.
Yeah, I think when you look back at what the Mets had last year with Darnell and Rene Rivera, who will throw in, and Plawecki, you know, they finished seventh in the major leagues in runs batted in. They finished in the top 10 in home runs, in slugging percentage. In the offensive categories, the Mets catchers as a unit were in the top third of the league in a lot of categories. So
yeah,
there wasn't much room to upgrade. And you lost Rivera, but I think Kevin Plawecki showed at the end of last season that he's ready to take the next step. He's also hit very well in camp so far. You know, I know that, you know, it's defensively where these guys stand. You know, they probably aren't the greatest throwing catchers in the world. Plawecki's a little bit better than Darno in terms of accuracy and footwork, but neither one is a strong arm. And, you know, their game calling is going to be challenged this year. You know, Dave Eidman is going to put the laps. They're going to be the ones calling pitches. They're going to be the ones running the meetings for the advanced scouting of their next opponents, and it's all going to fall on them. So, you know, it'll be an interesting thing to see how they handle that. But as far as the offensive numbers, you know, there aren't many upgrades unless you're going to go get Wilson Contreras or Gary Sanchez, who also has his defensive limitations. Mm-hmm. Sal Perez. I mean, outside of the big name catchers, there wasn't really an upgrade to be had.
Right.
So, you know, I know Jonathan Lucroy is somebody fans point to, but Lucroy had a terrible season in 2017.
Yeah, he did.
And who's to say that that's just not who he is at this point in his career? Not to mention, it's March 4th. He's still sitting out there. So if he was a valuable commodity to a team that really needed a catcher, he'd have been signed by now. So I don't think the Mets are missing too much by not getting Lucroy.
Excellent point, Wayne. Yeah. Now, we look at Dominic Smith. He's been out a little bit lately. Adrian Gonzalez has got the bulk of the work at first base. I felt that was a good pickup by the Mets, to pick up Adrian Gonzalez from the let go by the Dodgers. They're paying him next to nothing, and I like his upside.
Yeah, there's certainly a lot of upside there if you can get it out of him. I think at this stage in his career, yeah, I wouldn't count on him for 150 games, but the Mets don't need to because they have Dominic Smith, who's either ready or very, very close to it. And, you know, I could see where Adrian plays a couple of months at first base in the early part of the season and just kind of holds down the fort until Dom is really showing that he's going to be an everyday player in the major leagues. So it's fine. I think Adrian lends at least some presence in the clubhouse. He's certainly a well-known name throughout Major League Baseball. Been to a handful of All-Star games. He's been a great, great player in the game. And with that comes a lot of respect from the younger guys. So, yeah, I think it's fine. You know, could they have maybe a guy like Mark Reynolds who, you know, would have given them a little bit more? Sure, I guess they could have. But, you know, that also would have probably knocked Dominic Smith down even further and stunted his development. So it was kind of a strange situation with Dom, and I think the Mets made the most of it by bringing in Gonzalez.
Another great pickup, Todd Frazier, hit one out today. I think he will be a really great addition this year.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, he only hit .213 last year, but he had a pretty good on-base percentage. He still had 27 home runs. He had 40 the year before that. So, you know, they just want him to knock in runs and smack some homers and play a good third base. You know, they've been in such a holding pattern at that position because of David Wright's situation. Finally, they go out and get somebody to fill that spot permanently, or at least more permanently. And, you know, I think Frazier is another guy who again, just allows some veteran presence in the clubhouse. You know, by the end of last season, there were hardly any veterans to turn to. So I think the Mets, you know, were kind of focused on making sure they had some guys who could just lead the way. And, you know, I think Frazier and Gonzalez both can do that along with Jay Ruiz.
Now, Ahmed Rosario, this shortstop job is his.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No question about that. Rosario's the guy. He's ready. He's a super talent. You know, you've heard some comparisons in camp to Francisco Lindor, at least from an athleticism and a defensive standpoint. I mean, I don't know if Rosario will ever hit like Lindor, but it's in there for him to be close. And I think that Rosario is really still just tapping into his potential right now. There's a lot more to be had. And, you know, I think that he's certainly deserving of the opportunity. I think he's going to upgrade the defense in a big way. And, you know, it'll be exciting to watch him develop here over the next few seasons.
Yeah, it sure will. Now, we don't expect Cabrera really to play 150 games at second base. Jose Reyes and Wilmer Flores will be there to take up the slack?
Yeah, the same goes for shortstop. I think, you know, Reyes could spell Rosario at short.
Uh-huh.
He could spell Cabrera at second. He could spell Frazier at third. That's why he's there. Wilmer actually, I think, will play a lot of first base. I think that, you know, especially when there's a left-handed starter on the mound, whether Gonzalez or Smith is playing first on a fairly regular basis, that Flores will take up the slack against lefties playing first base. So we'll see Wilmer at second. We'll see him at first. You might see him at third every now and then, but I think we'll see him a lot at those two positions on the right side of the infield. I think the Mets are pretty deep as far as their backups are concerned. You know, anywhere on the diamond, really, if there's an injury, they have a veteran player that could come in and hold it down for a couple of weeks. A lot of teams don't have that. A lot of teams have to turn to a young player, a Gavin Cecchini, then to come in and start for a couple of weeks. Well, the Mets can go to Jose Reyes or Wilmer Flores. So I think that's a position of strength for them. And, you know, they worked hard to try to make that so.
Definitely, Wayne. Good depth there. Wayne Randazzo tonight with us on Sports Talk 1240. Looking at the outfield, Wayne, Cespedes, he is really the key to this lineup. If he stays healthy, I think the Mets will go further than people think.
Yeah, I think there's four players the Mets have that they absolutely need out there for the entire season, and Cespedes is one of them. Who's going to start a little bit later is the other position player, and then the two aces, you know, Syndergaard and DeGrom. The Mets need those guys. Start that they're supposed to. So if those four are out there getting 500 at bats between Conforto and Cespedes each, getting 30 some starts between Syndergaard and DeGrom each, then I think this team will be fine. I think that they're going to be a wild card contender. You know, maybe Washington slips up along the way and you can chase the NL East. But if those four are available to the Mets for the large majority of the season, then I think the Mets will have a good season. And Cespedes, I think, you know, he looks good. He's taking care of himself a little bit differently this off season. And, you know, I think, you know, since he's become a Met, the numbers have been there. Lineup.
Definitely. Now, Steven Matz doesn't make it out of the first inning today, Wayne. Second straight start where he's had some trouble. Is there cause for concern yet?
No, I think that it's just all mechanical with him right now. You know, he's still trying to find his way back from getting his ligament repaired last year, repositioned. And, you know, he's trying to prove that he's healthy. He's trying to prove that he can do this and be, you know, a high-standard major league player. So, you know, I think there's some will in Matz right now that he's, you know, he's trying to get results, and he might be taking this a little bit tougher. He might be feeling a little lost right now. But I think the Mets have a plan with him. I think Dave Island will go to work and try to make sure he's right. You still see the good stuff. I mean, that's the biggest key to me, is that you saw 93, 94 on the fastball today. You saw a good changeup. Didn't have a great curveball today, but, you know, that's going to come as the season goes along here, especially in this being this early. So it wasn't pretty for Mats out there in the last two starts, but I don't think there's any cause for concern, because I think everything looks right. It's just not finishing correctly for him right now. So I think once they get it together, that he'll be okay.
Looks like we have Jacob deGrom and Syndergaard penciled in as 1 and 2 in the rotation. Syndergaard lighting up the radar gun at over 100 already this season. What do you look from those two, Wayne?
Yeah, they got, like I said before, they got to be the aces. They have to get out there and make 30-plus starts. They have to soak up close to 200 innings each. You know, they really need those guys. It's got to be those two. If one of them gets hurt, you know, things are going to go wayward more quickly for the Mets, just like they did last year when they lost Syndergaard at the end of April. So you need those two badly. And I think that the Mets, you know, by getting Jason Vargas, they lighten the load on guys like Mats and Harvey and Wheeler and Kesselman. You don't need as much from them now if you get what you're supposed to out of Syndergaard and DeGrom. So, yeah, I think the weight of the world will be on those two this season, because I think the Mets' only chance for true success is around those two.
Definitely. Now, the bullpen, let's talk about that a little bit. Mickey Callaway has said that he doesn't really name an official closer. So who do you see, and as far as taking up that role for the Mets this season?
Well, I think what he means is that, you know, if Jerry's Familia can get a big out in a seventh or eighth, and if the Mets are playing the Yankees and it's a one-run game and Judge and Stanton are coming up with men on base in the seventh, then Familia is going to come in the game and try to get those two out. And, you know, that might leave the eighth for some of the other guys, or maybe Familia pitches the eighth and A.J. Ramos pitches the ninth. But, you know, he's not going to just rely on the fact that, you know, it's the ninth inning, let's throw Familia out there. You know, if there is a big spot before that, then I think we'll see Familia in some situations that aren't exactly safe situations in terms of what the statistic means. But that might save the game a little bit differently for the Mets at a different time. So Familia is their best reliever. There's no question about that. It's just a matter of when they feel like they'll get the most out of him. And, you know, I think he'll still get the large majority of the saves, but, you know, there is that option to throw him into a situation where the Mets might need a big out earlier than the ninth inning, and Familia is going to be flexible and fill that role. I think that would be huge for the Mets to do that. And it's the smart way to play it. You know, there's no reason to save your best pitcher for sometimes a situation where you're up by 3 runs in the ninth inning and the bottom of the order is coming up. You should be able to get out of that with somebody else. So, you know, Familia, I think, will be used, you know, in those marquee spots where the Mets might need something out of the ordinary, and he'll be that guy. So, you know, I wouldn't read too much into the saves or how many save opportunities. He'll still get those, but, you know, he's going to be used in a way that is going to be, you know, the most helpful to the team.
I do a segment, Wayne, on occasion that I call Baseball at the Movies, and I usually have on an actor from one of the great baseball movies of the past couple of years. One thing that you and Ronnie discussed today was Jerry Blevins' take on Field of Dreams. Now, I'm going to have Timothy Busfield, who played Kevin Costner's brother-in-law, coming on in a few weeks. Now, what's your take on Field of Dreams? I thought it was an excellent film.
Yeah, I think most people do. Jerry Blevins is kind of harsh on it, but you know, I think it's all in good nature. You know, Jerry's a great guy. And,
yeah.
You know, it was funny to hear some of the criticisms, because they're actually valid. You know, shoeless Joe Jackson was not a right-handed batter and didn't throw right-handed, so it was a very pretty valid criticism. And I get some of the stuff he was saying about Moonlight Graham. They didn't let him play, just like in his. Big league, albeit brief, big league career. Some of it was corny, obviously. I think Costner's love of the game and James Earl Jones's love of the game are evident in that movie. I think that's why it strikes people the way it does. and some of the big speeches in that movie stick with you as a baseball lover. So it's a fun thing to read Jerry's thoughts on Field of Dreams. Somewhat controversial. I agree. Have a catch. That's the first time I'd ever, and really one of the only times I've ever heard that phrase is in that movie. So.
Is that right? You see, we used to say that all the time when I was a kid. Let's have a catch.
Howie said the same thing. Howie said that too. So yeah, I it might be a very regionalized thing.
Yeah, it's probably a New York thing too. Yeah, have a catch.
But that movie was filmed in Iowa, so they should have used the Midwestern vernacular.
Exactly.
So I get it. I get where he's coming from. But I love that movie. I think most baseball fans do. But The Sandlot's a great movie too, and Major League and Bull Durham, some of the other ones he mentioned. Although he did mention For Love of the Game, which
I don't care for that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea in theory, but I don't know that it landed with me. So different strokes for different folks, I guess.
So quickly, Wayne, where are you looking for the Mets to finish this year?
Yeah, I mean, when Syndergaard and DeGrom are out there for 70 starts and a lot of these guys, I'm not even going to say if they're healthy. Because it's a 162 game season. Guys are going to go on the disabled list. You're not going to have a perfect health for the entire year. If you do, then congratulations. You've beaten everybody at that point because nobody has that kind of luck over the course of a long season. But if you have a normal pattern of health, if you're just in the middle of the pack health wise, if you just have a few DL stints here and there, nothing major, you don't lose half your lineup and most of your rotation and three-fourths of your bullpen, the things that were happening to this team, if they can just normalize their injuries, then I think this team should finish with a win total that is somewhere in the mid to high 80s. Maybe they can push 90 wins. You never know how it's going to turn out with the trade deadline. But, there's parts here that should make this team successful and give them an opportunity to win a wild card in what is still a pretty thin National League. You look around the league, the Diamondbacks and Rockies will be good, but not great. Same for the Brewers and the Cardinals. Maybe the Phillies have an uprise a little bit this year. But, as far as the upper echelon, Washington, the Cubs, the Dodgers, that's still it. And, you never know. LA could have a World Series hangover. We've seen that. We saw that with the Mets 2 years ago. We saw that with the Cubs last year. So, it's not to say the Dodgers are going to go out there and win 100 games again. They very well may not.
Right. Well, Wayne, it's been a pleasure speaking with you tonight. Thanks for spending part of your Sunday night with us, taking time out. I really appreciate it.
All right, Bill. Thanks for having me on.
Take care. We'll talk to you soon. Wayne Randazzo, folks. Next up, we'll talk 1980 gold medal hockey with gold medal winner Dave Christian. So stay with us, folks.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your Gust Buster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
All right, we're back with Sports Talk 1240 on GBB Freeport, Long Island, New York. I'm Bill Donahue with you, taking you through this Sunday evening. I hope you're enjoying Sports Talk 1240 tonight. We got spring training in full swing. I was listening to our former guest Wayne Randazzo with Ronnie Darling from Port St. Lucie today. And it's a great time of year, spring training. It really is. And teams are busy going at it in Tampa and Port St. Lucie, respectively. So we're looking forward to following their exploits until the season opens at the end of the month. Well, my next guest, a member of the 1980 Miracle on Ice team, took the gold medal back at Lake Placid in 1980, went on to have a stellar career in the NHL, scoring 340 goals. I welcome to Sports Talk 1240 tonight, Dave Christian. Dave, good evening.
Good evening, Bill. Great to be with you.
Great to have you with us, Dave. Now, you grew up in Minnesota. Just like to know, who did you root for, your favorite teams, your favorite players, et cetera?
You know, as a kid growing up, I grew up right on the Canadian border, small town of Waro. And so we got CBC, Hockey Night in Canada. And it seemed like every year at playoff time, Boston would play in Montreal. And I was a Bobby Orr fan and became a Boston Bruins fan. And I'm not so sure it wasn't as much as them always being the underdogs playing against the Montreal Canadiens. But for some reason, I rooted for and Bobby Orr and rooted for the Bruins.
Understand. Okay. Now, one thing I found out by doing my homework today, Dave, is that your father and your uncle, both of them, were members of the 1960 gold medal team that won gold in Squaw Valley.
That is correct. They played, and I was under a year old when I was born in 59, so I wasn't quite a year old when they won in Squaw Valley in 1960, but got to know a lot of members of that 60 team and admired and looked up to them. When we went through it in 80, it was like, why can't it happen? This is something that's happened before, so
right.
why can't it be again?
Now, one thing that I read somewhere, Dave, and perhaps you could correct me on this if I'm wrong, that one of the last guys cut from that 1960 U.S. team was Herb Brooks.
That is true, and we were in 1980. All the players on that 80 team were aware of that, and I wasn't at the time when I was less than a year old, but I had known Herb Brooks through my dad and through my uncle and through hockey in Minnesota prior to that. But we were, as players on that 80 team, we were all aware of that story, and it is true. And Herb related it as when the U.S. he was the last player cut. He was watching that game. He tells the story. He's watching that game with his father, the gold medal game. And when the U.S. won, his father turned to him and said, "Well, I guess they cut the right guy."
Oh man. Yeah.
That would be tough.
Yeah. That's definitely harsh. Now, one thing I found out too, Dave, is that you're Brock Nelson's uncle. Brock Nelson, of course, folks know around here from the Islanders.
Yeah, so it's been a lot of fun. It's been enjoyable to see his progress and see his development in the NHL. And you know, not really having had a chance when he was a young kid to see him play a lot. But it's fun now to catch the games that I can and see him playing in the NHL.
We just have to hope that Mr. Tavares decides to re-sign here. That's all we have to hope for.
Yeah, that for sure. If you're an Islander fan, that you're all waiting for that to happen.
Definitely. Now, talk a little bit about, Dave, the team selection right before the Olympics. How did Herb go about that? And talk about some of the experiences you recall from that period of time.
Well, I think the selection process was part of the National Sports Festival. It was in Colorado Springs, and there were 80 players invited. We played for a couple of weeks, made up of four teams, and you know, a lot of players that we had all become accustomed to playing against in college with our respective college teams. And you know, it was competitive to say the least. I mean, we had lots of guys wanting it, and you know, that meeting at the end of it, at the end of the 2 weeks, and we were in a small classroom of some kind, and you know, he read off, and there was no rhyme or reason to, not in alphabetical order, not according to seniority or whatever, but he just randomly read off 26 names and told us to, you know, meet in a, go to the back of the room that we were in, or to in the next room right next door. And so that's, you know, that was probably, as big a moment as anything, is to have your name read as one of the 26 in that first selection, and being able to make that phone call, back to our parents and home to let them know that we had been selected to start with that Olympic team.
Right. Now, it's mentioned in the movies. We see the scene between Herb Brooks and Jimmy Craig about the psychological test that Herb gave you guys. Now, that was 300 questions?
It was a lot of questions.
Wow.
How he used it or what he used it for, I'm not sure. And I can remember taking the test, but I don't remember what any of the questions were or anything like that. And at the time, I don't know that we were even aware that, you know, there were players that didn't take it. And, you know, we've spent many years, it's been 38 years. We've spent the past 38 years trying to draw out of players if they had a guaranteed spot on the team. And nobody will come forward and say, yeah, I was, you know, Herb had told me that I had a spot for sure on the team.
Yeah.
You know, we think there were some, we think there might have been a handful of guys, but nobody will say that they were told that.
Now, there was hostility. You of course, from the University of North Dakota, but there was the built-in hostility between the Golden Gophers and the Terriers from Boston University, correct?
Yes, there was.
And yeah.
It was holdover from an NCAA playoff, I think an NCAA Final Four. So they had some run-ins in the previous 4 years. Those two teams. So there was some there's some carryover that we had to work through. And I don't know if there wasn't really a defining moment. It just kind of happened. I think everybody come to the realization that, each player on that team had something to offer. We better get used to, one another.
Yeah. Right. Now, you guys called the line to line skating Herbies. Right?
Yes, that's right.
Now, it is true, just like depicted in the movies, that I believe it was after the game with Norway that Herb made you guys skate Herbies from line to line, until the janitor in the building turned the lights off.
Yeah, that did happen. That was in one of our first trips to Europe in our exhibition schedule. It was in, really a nothing game, but you know, the message was sent that if we weren't ready to prepare, by the time we got to Lake Placid, we weren't going to go anywhere. So we better bring it every day, regardless if it was practice or exhibition game or whatever. But, you know, he made the point. It did really happen. They did shut the lights off, and we did continue to skate. So.
Man,
he did make his point.
We're talking to Dave Christian tonight on Sports Talk 1240. Now, the exhibition game at Madison Square Garden against the Soviets, where one of their guys skated out with the trophy. Talk a little bit about that game. That game, of course, if people don't remember, was won by the Soviet Union 10-3 over these guys.
Yeah, and I think going in, it was our first experience, and Herb Brooks said that it wasn't set up that way. He didn't intend it for it to be set up that way, but I don't know that we truly believe him. It was an opportunity for us to kind of get rid of the mystique. We were in awe of that team. We had watched them play against in the Challenge Cups and play against and beat the NHL All-Stars not long before that. And so, yeah, they brought the cup. Whatever it is they had won, they brought the cup out before the game for pregame warmups, and it was you know, they were an intimidating team.
Yeah.
And we were certainly we respected them. And the point that Herb made following that game was at one point, I think it was the score was 7-0 during the first half of the game, and then from the second half of the game, we finally started to play and ended up being, you know, 3-3 the rest of the game. So final score was 10-3, but Herb reminded us of that fact that for a period of that game, the last part of the game, we played them 3-3. So I think that was the point that he drove home following that game.
Yeah, good point to take away from that, Dave. Yeah, now the pre-medal round in the Olympics, give us a rundown of that quick.
I think going in to the Olympics, Herb, one of his last meetings, he flat out told us that, you know, we didn't have to be worried about and concerned about winning a gold medal because the Soviets had that wrapped up. He said if we play as well as we can and we get some breaks, you know, maybe it's a bronze medal might be possible. If we play our absolute best and we get every break imaginable, you know, maybe a silver is to be had. But he goes, you know, just forget about the gold. The Soviets have the gold. And that was one of, you know, before we had played a game, that was kind of one of the last statements he made to us. But as we went through and you know, it was set up, we played Sweden and the Czech Republic were our first two games, and we knew that we needed points out of those two games if we had any shot at all playing in the medal round. And ended up, Bill Baker scored a late goal to tie Sweden in our first game. And we played the Czech Republic, and in our second game, it might have been the best game we played of the whole tournament. We, you know, what was considered to be the second best team in the world, we blew out. I think it was 7-3 was a final score.
Right,
it might have been our best, might have been the best game that we played in the whole tournament. Then we just had to be careful. So we came out of the first two games with 3 points, and you know, we just had to be careful that we didn't let up and let down against, I think we played Norway, West Germany, Slovakia, not Slovakia, can't think of the third team. We just had to be aware of not having a letdown. So our whole idea was to get into that medal round.
Right. You get into the medal round. The game against the Soviet Union. What was Herb's pregame speech like?
You know, I remember it as being fairly short. And as young a team as we were, I don't know if we really fully understood it, but it was, you know, this, you were born to be here, every one of you. You were meant to be hockey players.
Right.
This moment is yours. And that was about it. It was just like, you know, you've spent hours and hours and hours dreaming of this and been on the ice for your whole life. You played hockey basically your whole life. This is it. This is what it comes down to. Just go out and play and enjoy it. Whatever happens, happens.
Right. Dave Christian with us tonight, Sports Talk 1240. In the first period, Dave, you take a long shot on Tretiak. Mark Johnson picks up the loose puck and fires it past him, almost zero on the clock. Very controversial. The Russians had a fit about that.
Yeah, it was, you know, just getting a pass. I think they got a pass from Kenny Morrow in inside our own blue line. And as I'm coming up the ice, I realized that, you know, the period's is winding down. It's pretty much over. And I just, you know, for some reason decide, you know, from just over center ice to take a long shot. And I didn't know it at the time, but one of our players went to the bench and changed in the last 10 seconds. Mark Johnson actually had jumped off and came off the bench in a line change. And, you know, the two Soviet defensemen, I think everybody just assumed that the period was going to end. And I think Tretiak was just taken for granted that his defenseman, would, you know, he'd just play the stop the puck, let it bounce off of him. One of his defensemen would, you know, grab the puck and you know, for some reason, their whole team stopped playing. And Mark Johnson just went from the bench directly as hard as right to the net and was able to pick the puck up on the, pick the rebound up and deep Tretiak. And, you know, he went back and he looked at the highlights and the green light, the red light was allowed to come on. At that time, I think the gold lights were tied to the clock. So the red light was allowed to come on.
Yeah.
And so there was time left. So there was time left on the clock.
And the rest is history, as they say. Now, years later, when we're talking about Tikhanov pulling Tretiak, Mark Johnson is on the same team as Slava Fetisov. And Fetisov says, the coach is crazy. You guys had to be amazed when they pulled out Tretiak.
Yeah, yes, we were. And, you know, Brooks made it a point to continually talk and talk about the fact that they pulled the best goalie in the world.
So, right, the greatest goalie in the world.
Pulled the greatest goalie in the world, and so he reminded us that. And at the time, we didn't understand it. Maybe it was kind of a political move by Tikhanov with some of the younger players on his team, just to try to tell them relay to them he was still in charge, and it wasn't the level of play that they had, but it was his coaching that was the difference. Who knows what it was, but I think he has said that it probably was the biggest mistake he's ever made.
Yeah,
as a coach,
definitely right.
It happened, and not that Michigan came in. Michigan had played the final game in the Challenge Cup prior to the Olympics, and the Soviets had won. Yet a shutout. The Soviets won that game 6-0. So it wasn't like he was a bad goalie, but he wasn't Tretiak.
Exactly. Now, the pressure by the Soviets in the third period must have been astounding, and we can see that on the replays of the game, that they just kept pouring it on. Now, Tikhanov, as a surprise to everybody, never pulls the second string goalie for an extra attacker.
Yeah, it was somewhat surprising, and yet, you know, they probably hadn't ever been faced with it. I don't know that they had ever been behind.
True.
You know, they'd won every Olympic game they played since 1960. So 64, 68, 72, 76. Up until that game in 80, they'd won every game, and I don't know that they had very many times been behind, like that.
Good late point. Third period. Right. So
they probably weren't accustomed to it. Not something that they had been through. But yes, I think looking back and watching it, I think everybody was somewhat surprised that they didn't, didn't even appear to be thinking about pulling the goalie.
Now the clock runs out, Dave. You guys are going nuts. Meanwhile, the Soviets are standing on their line waiting to shake hands. What was the post-game handshake like that night?
I think there was respect both ways. I think they were, somewhat in disbelief. And I think I don't know that they gave us enough credit for the level of conditioning that we were in.
Uh-huh.
And it was one of the things that Brooks laid out very early in our season, right from the very beginning of that first selection was, when we get to Lake Placid, we may not be the best team in Lake Placid, but we will be the best conditioned team. And so everything we did leading into Lake Placid was done around, being in top condition. Tons of skating and some off ice workouts and whatnot, just to be able to play with them. To that point, really, there hadn't been a team that really could play a full 60 minutes and skate with the Soviet team. And I think that was the one thing that we had was an extremely high level of conditioning.
Sure. Now of course, you beat the Soviets that night. You go on to the gold medal game, which you were behind again and had to come back from behind versus Finland. Now, Herb tells you, coming out for the final period, if you lose this game, you'll take it to your graves.
That is true. And then he went to walk out of the locker room and turned around and said, to your grave. And so it was, you know, it was at that point that I think, you know, we had decided in between periods and between the second and third period that we were not going to allow this. We were not letting this get away from us. I think there was a little bit of a change in the focus heading into that last game against Finland, because that was the one time that, you know, we were all aware that we had to win. And so the objective going into that game was, hey, we have to win. And it affected how we played. We played a little bit nervous, played a little tight to start that game, you know, because up until that point, we really were playing just to go out the ice and give it everything we had, play as well as we could. And, you know, the results were there. And all of a sudden in that game, you know, we were kind of going into that game, we were expected to win at that point, and we had to win. And, you know, Brooks did remind us of that. No one will ever remember you beating the Soviet team if you don't win this game.
Exactly. What a great point that was from Herb. Now, your professional career, Dave, started a week after you won the gold medal. You were with the Winnipeg Jets, and you still have the record for the fastest goal in a player's first NHL game. 7 seconds into the first shift, you scored.
That's right. It was the second. It was an offensive zone faceoff, and it was the second shift of the game. My first shift, I took the draw and won the faceoff, and my winger tapped it back to our defenseman. And he took a shot on net, and I had after the faceoff, I'd gone to the front of the net. The rebound came out right on my stick, and I was able to score. It was a lot of relief in that goal, because I did not score a goal during the Olympics.
Right.
And so to go there, I was a week later. It was a Sunday following our Sunday victory in Placid, and so I got my professional career started in a really good way.
You were due. You were really due.
I was due. There you go. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah.
I was overdue.
Yeah. Now, in your NHL career, Dave, you played with some great Hall of Famers. You played with Bobby Hull and Brett Hull, Chris Chelios, Scott Stevens, Gartner. Of all those guys, or maybe there's somebody else, who was the greatest teammate that you had?
Oh, man, there were so many of them. You know, Rod Langley in Washington.
Rod Langley, yeah.
My center iceman for a lot of the time was there, Ben Gustafsson from Sweden. Ray Bourque, Cam Neely in Boston.
Right.
There were so many so many players on all the teams that I played with that were great teammates. I enjoyed it. The time, it went so fast. It's incredible how fast it goes, but I certainly had fun and enjoyed playing in every one of the five cities that I played in.
You did go to an NHL finals too.
I did with Boston.
Right.
1990, we got beat by Edmonton in the finals. They won all three games in Boston. And we ended up, they beat us 4-1. It was a great experience, and certainly wished it would have been, the result would have been different for the city of Boston. But, yeah, we enjoyed playing. It was certainly, you know, as it is, it's a long season and it's a long grind in the playoffs. And
sure
it,
is.
But it sure was fun.
Now, Dave, one memory of Herb Brooks that when you think of Herb, what do you remember, the first thing that comes to mind?
I think how much fun he was come game time, how much fun he was to play for.
Really?
Yeah. It was, you know, come game, he was very good on the bench. You know, always in control. Even to the point, I remember, you know, when Arruzzioni scored the goal to go ahead of the Soviet Union, the demeanor on the bench didn't change at all. It was, you know, was looking back on it, it was like, gosh, he really truly believed that at some point we would have a lead. So I just remember him as being as hard as he was and as tough as he was. He was fun to play for.
Excellent. Well, Dave, it's been a real pleasure having you with us tonight, looking back at the storied time of 1980 in Lake Placid. I thank you for taking time out of your Sunday night to spend it with us.
Thank you, Bill. It was a pleasure.
You take care. That's Dave Christian, folks. That'll do it for me tonight on Sports Talk 1240. I'd like to thank my guests, Wayne Randazzo and Dave Christian, my engineer, Brian Graves, and, of course, you for joining us. Stay tuned for hour number two on Sports Talk 1240. I'll see you on March the 18th. Until then, Bill Donahue wishing you a good evening, folks.
Expressed in the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240DFFM 95.9 Freeport, New York.
Their minds to something can really make a difference.
My goal is to help the environment.
Someday I'll find a cure for cancer.
At the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Federal Student Aid, we believe that aspiring minds can achieve anything. So we dedicate ourselves to making sure everyone has an opportunity to go to college. Each year, we provide more than $150 billion in grants, loans, and work-study funds, making higher education possible for anyone at any stage of life.
I can go back to college.
I can change careers.
I can make a difference.
Federal Student Aid, proud sponsor of the American Mind. Learn more about money for college at studentaid.gov.
My grades were bad. I would like get D's and C's.
I appeared to be doing good at my school life, but if you would see me at home, it would have been a completely different story.
I mean, it was just rough focusing on school when your mother is somebody you have to take care of.
It got worse and worse and worse throughout the years.
There are students who need somebody.
They can trust someone, and it could be the first person they've ever trusted in their life.
Communities and Schools is lowering America's dropout rate by helping more than 1.3 million kids every year get whatever they need to succeed in school.
If something was going on at home, we would go just stop by Miss Liberty's office and talk to her.
Communities and Schools vouched for me when everyone else had lost hope.
You can help change the picture of education right here in your community and across the nation. Visit communitiesandschools.org.
I hear people say we can't save every kid, but I think that we can.
This is WGBB AM 1240 and W240DFFM 95.9 Freeport, New York.
The views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.